At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Previously on No Reserves Radio.
Oh my God, Angelo, come on. Have some self-respect. The Eagles can't hurt you if you don't constantly pander to them.
Here's the biggest indictment of Dame that I can say. Dame has been so like off this year that Ren went on live air and said Jalen Brunson deserved an all-star start over him.
You are now Angelo DiDeLulo.
Do you think it is possible that the management of the Memphis Grizzlies are just buying into the reckless youth movement and they got rid of the one person in the locker room that probably was telling Ja to knock it off?
Because he's taken advantage of me multiple times when I was younger. That sounded bad. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're correct in that assessment.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to No Reserves Radio. I'm your host, Ren. With me, as always, Angelo. Austin is out tonight. He is sick. He actually skipped work today, which is kind of surprising. He doesn't really do that even when he's sick. Lot to talk about. Lot to talk about, because we haven't really been consistent for like 3 months, probably.
Yeah, you suck.
You are the one that changed jobs and are not as available, and it's fine. We'll figure it out. So we'll just kind of jump right into it, because like I said, I think we're going to hit on a lot of teams tonight, because we're just kind of generally vaguely talking about everyone, I think. But to kick it off, let's start with the Battle of LA, right? So we'll start with the Clippers and the Lakers, because I feel like there's an interesting kind of dichotomy going on between those two teams. I don't know if you agree with me, but I know that at the start of the season, Paul George left, right? We knew Kawhi was not going to start, at least for the first quarter of the season, right?
Yeah. Till Christmas, yeah.
I feel like a lot of people, myself included, and I don't know if you do as well, kind of counted the Clippers out just because of a lack of available talent. Am I incorrect in that? Like, even if not you specifically, I feel like most people said, you know, this sucks because I believe the Clippers pick is owned by the Boston Celtics this year. This is something I didn't pull up because I kind of forgot about it. Future draft picks. Let's see. I believe Boston actually has the Clippers next. First, no. Thunder. It's the Thunder.
Okay.
I want to clarify, but I believe Philadelphia. No, they have Philly. Oh yeah, LA. Yeah, they have LA Clippers.
2025 first round pick with Thunders from the Paul George deal. Yes.
So, like, we were kind of dreading this, right? And so far, James Harden has looked like prime James Harden. I believe it was Terrence Mann said that this was the best defensive team he's ever been a part of. And that was in the preseason. And all things considered, Terrence Mann is a certified hater. Like, every time he is on a podcast, he's throwing shade at Paul George. What was it? Yesterday it was like, oh, everyone in this locker room actually wants to be here. And so we kind of thought it was in that same mindset, right, where he's just being the number one hater in the world. But so far this season, the Clippers have been kind of nice, and that's been led by James Harden, and we can't knock that. Like, we're having 40-point nights from James Harden for the first time in a while. But defensively, they're giving up, I believe it's the, yeah, so the fourth least field goal, or fourth least field goals per game, right? They're not that low in three-pointers, but they're kind of just collapsing the paint and letting teams try to shoot their way out of a game, which, based on the way the modern NBA goes, we should see that being detrimental. So maybe the law of averages will play out and suddenly we'll start seeing the Clippers lose games. But are you buying or selling on the Clippers stock at this point in the season, given how far above expectations they performed?
It depends on what you mean. So I do think, and this happens in every sport, but it does seem like it happens in the NBA more, where you get like the right construction of guys, and it results in more wins than a lot of people expected. I'm going to use the Hawks. I believe it was the 2015-2016 season where they actually ended up getting the one seed,
where they had four players on the All-Star team.
Right. You have situations like that occur in the NBA, and I do believe that this is going to end up being one of those situations. I'm not saying they're going to be number one in the West, but I do believe they could be a playoff team. The problem with that team doesn't make it to the finals usually.
No.
You at the end of the day, if you want to be a finals team, you need some sort of star power. And unless you want to say James Harden is star power enough to will the Clippers out of the West, and I don't think it is at his age.
Right.
Then, no. So I'm buying, I think the Clippers are better than we gave them credit for, but I'm not buying them as a legitimate threat to anything.
So with that said, you have to remember there is star power here, because Kawhi Leonard is still going to play this season, presumably, and if he stays healthy, that's a big if, but
you're adding
Kawhi to a team that has already performed. Now, granted, that could screw up chemistry, right? Like, because I think they've been starting Derek Jones Jr. at the small forward, mm-hmm. and I'd imagine that. No, he would have to be the four, because they've been running a really small lineup, because Norm Powell's been starting. I want to say Chris Dunn has been starting too. So, like, realistically, you would have to move probably Dunn to the bench. You run James Harden at the one, Norm Powell at the two, Derek Jones Jr. at the three, and then Kawhi slots into the four, and then Ivica Zubac at the five. But realistically, like, this team has kind of conceptualized the existing on hopes and dreams mantra.
Yep.
And, I mean, also, James Harden has had some... there's been a lot of players. Like, Norm Powell's actually leading the team in scoring right now, which, honestly, I didn't know that until I just looked at it, which is kind of surprising. He's averaging 24 points per game this season.
Yeah, that's not sustainable.
I mean, it might be. It's the modern NBA. Like, 24 points per game is really not that much when you think about it. But overall, I do think that they're four games out from the one seed. I don't think the Clippers have a chance at the one seed. But given how competently this team has performed, I feel like, granted, it's the West, but I feel like I'm confident in saying that it is real. They've been telling us this is who they are, and this is who they ended up being. So, like, I don't have many concerns when you're going to be adding Kawhi Leonard, right? Like, it's not like a team that is performing well with a star player and then the star player gets hurt, because I'm not the biggest Kawhi Leonard fan. We all know this, right? But Kawhi Leonard is the best player on this team, and this team has performed very well so far. They're like 58% win percentage. They're four games above 500, whatever the math adds up to be. So just adding that
some really good teams too. They've beaten the Nuggets. They've beaten the Warriors.
We'll talk about the Nuggets in a minute, but I don't know. I definitely buy in on it. I think it's legit. I think that they're going to be a. I would not say they're going to make the conference finals or anything like that, right? But I could see them being a team that upsets someone in the first round. Like, if they're the sixth seed, and who's... Let's do this matchup real quick. Who's the current... So they're six. They would play the Warriors.
Yep. Well,
I mean, that... No, they would play the Mavericks. Sorry. They would play the Mavericks.
Oh, they'd lose that. They'd lose that.
But, like, would you be surprised if they won it? Like,
yes
on paper, they're going to lose that game. Or that series, but like, I'm not asking like, would you be surprised? I'm asking like, if I told you, oh, the Clippers won Game 7 last night. It's surprising, but it's not surprising, right?
You pretty disagree? Surprising. Yeah. I disagree. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will see. Give me one. Sorry, Austin's sick. I'm also getting over something, so sometimes I have to stop and cough. The other side of Los Angeles, the Lakers, LeBron James. Ugh.
Yep.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, Disney here.
It's time. It is time, and that's sad to say. LeBron James is, in fact, a mortal man. He is human. Let's just... Now, granted, last night, he looked pretty nice. Wait, was that last night? Yeah, it was last night. 12 for 18 from the field, 1 for 4 from 3, 29 points. Like, that's pretty nice. This is his only nice game recently. Okay, so before we get into the Lakers themselves, let's talk about King James. You said at the end is near. Do you think the end is this season?
No.
You think that he will regress this season,
yes,
and then he'll want his retirement tour, and he, LeBron James, is comfortable playing a season where he is going to average sub 20 points because that is the pace he is on for the first time in his career if he continues his regression trend. Next season, he would average sub 20 points. The lowest he's ever averaged was 20.9 in his rookie season. This season, he's averaging 22.3.
Mm-hmm.
You think LeBron James is comfortable playing a season mid?
I think...
Like, that's the... It's not like... Because he could average 19, 18 points, whatever. That's good NBA numbers.
Yes.
That's not LeBron James numbers.
No.
And every season he plays is going to drive down his career averages, which, while they're not as important to legacy, they are the things that pop up when people post, like, stupid-ass Reddit threads about, like, comparing players, and it's like, oh, this player averaged 25 points per game for their career. They're worse than this player that averaged 28 points per game for their career, even though this player played 20 seasons and this player played 12 seasons. Because people don't really understand how statistics work.
Yeah. We've learned that over the course of the last 2 months that people don't know how things work.
Yeah.
Anyway, go
ahead. So do you think that LeBron wants the retirement tour so much that he will sacrifice that part of his legacy? Now, granted, what does LeBron James have to prove, right? Like, I get that.
It really depends. So, like, I could see a scenario where he wants the last year to be in Cleveland. It would be an added bonus if Cleveland is also, and we'll probably talk about this later, but if Cleveland is a legitimate threat to win an NBA title, that would also be a bonus to get just another ring for the cupboard. You get to play in your hometown for one last time, and you get to be honored by the rest of the NBA. I think I could see it. I don't know if it'll happen, but I think I could see it.
I just, I don't just knowing what we know about LeBron, I don't see him being comfortable being a role player, which is essentially what he would be. He would still, like, if using Cleveland as an example, maintaining the current roster, which there would obviously be some changes, but probably nothing major given where Cleveland is. We'll talk about them shortly. He would just slot into the starting three, and that would be fine. And
yeah.
But on that team, LeBron is probably next season, he would be the third or fourth option, minimum.
That's assuming Garland and Donovan stay together. Yeah.
Which, again, all of those questions are out the window. We will talk about them in a minute. I don't know. It's tough, but that's where we're at in LeBron's career, where it's like, we're going to be talking about, is this it? When are we going to get the announcement? Are we going to get the announcement? Or is it just going to be the end of the season? He's going to be like, all right, cool, I'm out. See you guys later. I don't see that. I see LeBron wanting the last dance type thing. Because I don't think LeBron wants to let fans down. Because, like, if you haven't had a chance to see LeBron play in person, that would be like, okay, this is your last time. Go do it. Like, I was very lucky to get to see Kobe. Like, I saw Kobe when I was really young, right? When he did his retirement tour, friend of my parents was a sponsor for the Pacers at the time, and he was able to get me tickets to Kobe's final game. Kobe dropped like 60 on the Pacers. It's fine. It was Kobe's last game. I'm fine with it. But to be able to experience that as a person old enough to actually appreciate the game instead of just like watching people play basketball, like, that was big for me. And I'm sure LeBron wants to give NBA fans that, because even if you hate LeBron, you respect him. Like, that's how it goes. Lakers, though. Kind of ass. Like, they're above 500.
So you're saying kind of ass, but they're also...
What?
You're saying kind of ass, but they're also above 500.
I mean, they've also had a pretty easy schedule.
Yeah, that's true.
And mostly, like, LeBron has been... Like, that's kind of... Damn cough. That's kind of like what I'm talking about, though, is like this team. So Kenny Beecham had an episode of his podcast a couple days ago, and go check it out. But he was talking about how, like, if you're an NBA GM, you win a championship, next 5 years, you don't have to do shit. Like, you are coasting because you won that championship. Like, you know what you're doing, right? Like, they're going to let you keep doing whatever you're doing. But it's not working because the Lakers have just been consistently like, let's run it back, let's run it back, let's run it back. The LeBron AD pairing is fantastic. Like, it is a perfect pairing if you're talking about LeBron and AD perfectly healthy and perfectly in their primes. That ain't the case anymore. The decisions that Pelinka has made around this roster over the past 2.5 years are not exactly sustainable, because this isn't a team, like, right now, you can't say this team's competing for a championship, right?
Yeah, no, they're not.
But they're also not structured in a way for the future. Like, Dalton Connect's been amazing. Absolutely amazing. Like
I said, he would.
He's going to be an all-rookie team, if not in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. I'm not going to win it, but he's in the conversation. But besides that, what does the future of the Lakers look like? What do you do? Because we're approaching, we're 10 days from the time that we're recording, when this episode comes out, it'll be 8 days, 7 days, something like that, from when contracts that were signed over the offseason are eligible to be traded, okay? So we are entering trade season. Like, that is official. Now, normally, trades don't start to ramp up until closer to the deadline. But we have had years where it starts to blow up, and there are teams that really do need to make a move now. Are the Lakers a team that you could see being front and center in trade discussions early as trade season opens, especially around a player like an Anthony Davis that provides value to a team attempting to compete for a championship, and the Lakers are not? And it would be a team that has young pieces, because the Lakers are about to enter a rebuild, whether they want to or not. Now, granted, it's Los Angeles. And not only is it Los Angeles, it's the Los Angeles Lakers. It's a free agent draw. They're going to be able to pull star power to the Lakers as long as they are not tragically ass. But like how we saw after Kobe retired, when they had D'Lo, when they had Kuzma, they had Swaggy P, they had Lonzo. You flip that talent, that young talent that you cultivate, for Anthony Davis, and then you bring LeBron James in, and then you win a championship. That's the Lakers' way. Do you think it would be remiss of Lakers management to not be active this deadline in building that war chest for the future? Again, Lakers are not going to draft and build. That's not what the Lakers do. That's not what the Lakers have to do. They are the LA Lakers. Do you think this is the prime time to start shopping an Anthony Davis for a young player? Like, even...
Do you always... I'm just going to be honest. I don't think they're going to move AD. I think they think that they can get someone else around AD after LeBron is gone, and they're just going to run it as is. And
they probably can, because, again, it's Los Angeles. But do you think, like, that's not necessarily what I'm asking. Do you think that's the right decision? Because do you think at this point in Anthony Davis's career, you could build a championship roster with him as the focal point?
Probably. Honestly. Probably. If he stays healthy, that's a big if.
That's the caveat, though. That's the caveat. Because you could build a championship roster around Zion Williamson right now. He's not going to be healthy in the playoffs. I don't know. I feel like you have to at least consider the possibility of making a trade. I think that we've had a very arguably slow deadline for what feels like 4 years. I don't know for sure. I'd have to look. Like, last year, I think the biggest deal was Pascal Siakam to the Pacers. Like, just right off.
Yes.
But all things considered, Pascal Siakam is an amazing second option. He's not a caliber of player that shuts down Reddit, right? Oh, Twitter's overloaded, or X is overloaded because of this trade. Like, that doesn't happen from Pascal Siakam. But I feel like that might happen this season. I don't know why. There's just a little nagging voice in the back of my head that said something big is coming. And tonight, like, while we're talking about these teams, I want to kind of figure out what that is. Do we have anything else on the Lakers?
No, I don't have anything else. No. So, what if the... Interesting. What if the Clippers fall back to the mean and move Kawhi?
What if the Clippers just buy into the bro culture and move Kawhi because they think that they have the... What was it in baseball? Sabermetrics? Where you have a bunch of ass players, but they're good at one thing, and they all kind of, like, cover each other's weaknesses.
Yeah, sabermetrics.
Like, what if the Clippers... What if the Clippers are just in that situation where they're like, we are competitive enough, we don't have our own draft pick, so we have no reason to tank. Like, fuck it. Go all in. they just move Kawhi for futures because they're preparing for a life post this roster. Because again, this year you're playing with like house money, right? Because you do not have your own draft pick. Where, like, you could tank right now, it's pointless. You could win right now, and you're not going to win the championship. Like, we've acknowledged that. Like, you would have to draw perfect hands. Every other team you play against would have to suffer, hopefully not catastrophic injuries, but injuries enough to keep their players out, and then you would have to get really lucky in a run. So you're not in the Cooper Flagg Ace Bailey sweepstakes, and you're also not competing for a championship. So what should you be doing? You should be trading your most tradable asset for a future draft capital. That's actually a really good question. And now that I'm thinking about, like, where would Kawhi make sense on a team that isn't going to, like, on paper, based on, like, what we know about how players regress and how things change, what's a team that... Sorry, I didn't mute my mic. What's a team that you can, not objectively, because this is all subjective, but objectively say is not going to be competing in 2 to 3 years that you want the draft pick of, right? This is the Danny Ainge Boston Celtics 2010 mindset. You want their draft pick because you know they're not going to be competing in a couple years, but they're competing right now, and they're one, maybe two pieces away from making noise that they aren't actively making. Now, the issue is the two teams that immediately come to mind for me are in-conference rivals, right? Because Golden State Warriors, Wardell Stephen Curry is a god.
That's not the first team that came to mind, but go on, sorry. For me,
it's not necessarily the first team, but it's one of the two teams. The other one is the Denver Nuggets, because once Jokic is gone, that team is in free fall. What teams were you thinking?
If they can get it back together and get healthy, the 76ers.
Fair, but if they get it together, Tyrese Maxey's young enough that they're not going to be tragic in 2 years. Because that's kind of what I'm like. Jamal Murray has shown he probably can't, well, not probably, he cannot be a number one option. Like, I know you say, oh, Jokic needs his comrades. Jokic is still the best, but Jokic is still the best player in basketball right now. And he's been the best player in basketball for like 4 years. But when Jokic is gone, or when Jokic regresses because he's a 7 foot tall, 300 pound thing.
Farm boy.
The Nuggets are not going to be great. Jamal Murray, as good as he is, he's not good enough to lead a team, and he's also not going to be healthy enough to lead a team. The Golden State Warriors, after Steph Curry, what are you doing? Like, what do you think? Like, they're going to go back to the Monte Ellis Warriors. That's my two. The 76ers, they just signed Maxey to a contract extension. And Maxey's good. And he's young. He's going to get better. Do I think he's going to carry the 76ers to an NBA championship if Joel either regresses or gets hurt or whatever? No. But do I think he keeps you as a late lottery team at worst? Yeah. So I don't necessarily know, like, if I'm moving Kawhi for futures and my team does not have an exactly a great history of draft hits, I don't know if late lottery is good enough for me.
Interesting.
What
about the Lakers?
That's an interesting one, but does Kawhi move the needle? Does he raise the ceiling enough? Because I don't think you could argue potential. Kawhi really raises the floor, because like there's the chance he's just not going to play because he's going to have load management during the playoffs. But again, I don't think the Lakers, 4 years removed from winning a championship, are going to sacrifice the future when they... The writing is on the wall. You know this is the end of the LeBron AD pairing. One way or the other, this is it. I don't think you mortgage the future for that.
That's fair.
Now, there is, like...
It's still the Lakers, though, so you know.
Now, there is, like, other packages, like... The Pacers, like, if they're willing to trade either Jairus Walker or Benedict Mathurin, as a Pacer fan, please, God, no. If a team like that that's on the fringe of being a competitive team, one of those teams that's one or two pieces away but has young talent that you would be interested in, that's another possible option. There's not really a lot of those teams, though. I'm trying to think of any others that are, like, on the cusp but have young pieces.
The Kings?
Yeah. But I don't know. Kawhi is a player that could plug and play in a lot of systems. I don't like the fit next to De'Aaron Fox and DeMontis Sabonis. Just because of spacing. I think that De'Aaron Fox is probably the worst point guard you could pair Kawhi with. Grizzlies would be nice, actually. But you'd have to give up Zach Edey, and like, I really like the Edey fit with Jaren Jackson. I don't know. I guess we'll see. None of these teams could even make trades. Like, that's the thing. Next. Close that. Milwaukee Bucks. So this has been kind of drama fueled. And like, when, in the show notes, like when we were talking about what we wanted to talk about, one of the things I put was, which team do you think, or what teams do you think this is the most important trade deadline for? And I feel like the Milwaukee Bucks are probably number one for me.
Why?
Because you have Giannis Antetokounmpo. Okay? And you're at 500 in a week. Arguably weak Eastern Conference. Giannis is 30 years old. He's 31 tomorrow. Giannis is 31 tomorrow. Like the Lakers, your window is starting to close. We saw that last year, and we're seeing it this year. They're about to be 500 because they play the Celtics tonight, and the Celtics are 18-4, and they're not losing to this Bucks team. I probably just jinxed the Celtics, but when you have a player of Giannis's caliber, one, you're not trading Giannis. Like, that is off the table. You are not moving Giannis onto Antetokounmpo because you are not going to get the value back for him. Every single other player on this roster should be available. If you call tomorrow and say, I want Damian Lillard, here's my offer. If you are the Milwaukee Bucks and Doc Rivers and whoever else is in that front office, you should be listening. Now, if they call and ask for Giannis, unless they're offering like Luka, Tatum, you hang up the phone immediately. Also, I forgot that Aaron Rodgers owned the Bucks.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Just because you are at the end of Giannis's prime, if you want to have a shot at competing you need to make a move now, because any team can go on a run in the playoffs. Any team that has Giannis Antetokounmpo has a better shot of going on a run. And it would just be remiss to throw that all away and just say, you know what, we're just going to ride it out this season. And especially when, like, there's been such chemistry issues, because there was a video that was circulating around social media like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, where Giannis was walking off the court and he's yelling at someone, and we don't know who he was yelling at. And he basically, what he was saying is, if you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. We could talk about whoever that is, but likely it's Damian Lillard. Those two have not worked together in the way we thought they were going to. And that, again, kind of begs the question. Like, if you are the Milwaukee Bucks, you have Damian Lillard as a trade piece. Who are you looking at to pair with Giannis? That makes sense. Now, again, the only teams that would trade for a Lillard-caliber player are teams that are competing. Right? Yep. Those teams would have to have young assets that are valuable on the floor, but you think you're going to get more out of Damian Lillard, that the Bucks think they can capitalize on pairing alongside Giannis. Because you're not trading Damian Lillard for futures when you have Giannis still in his prime. But a team that is not competing does not want Damian Lillard, so you're kind of in a catch-22. Are there any teams that jump out to you as could utilize the service of Damian Lillard, or do you think the Bucks should just bite the bullet and ride it out because this is the bed that they themselves have made?
I think the Magic make a lot of sense, quite honestly.
Interesting. Who, like, thinking about it, like, Anthony Black next to Giannis would kind of be perfect. It's kind of like a Drew Holiday fit.
Mm-hmm.
But the Magic would not trade Anthony Black for Damian Lillard. I don't know. Because, like, that, the pairing of Paolo with Damian Lillard, that actually works really well for me. Now, if the Bucks were to attach a first-round pick, you're going to hate this. Not necessarily a first-round pick. Attach extra assets to it. Damian Lillard to the Atlanta Hawks for Trae Young. I think Trae Young fits with Giannis better than Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
You would have to attach assets to it because, again, the Hawks are not necessarily competing. I think they're in the playoff race right now, but even someone like me that is a Trae Young fan, they're not actually competing.
Oh, funny.
I had to mention Trae Young. I don't know. I feel like the Bucks are kind of going to be stuck in purgatory because there's really not a lot you can do to upgrade this roster, but this roster is not good enough to beat the Celtics. Correct or not?
No.
Yeah, so it's a very important trade deadline. I just don't know what you do. Chris Middleton, again, a player that could fit on a championship roster. He's old. And again, does he get a team over the hump, and what are they sending back? Philadelphia 76ers. This is just kind of a sad one. The 76ers are currently 5-15. They played exactly 6 minutes with all three of their big three healthy, and then Paul George hyperextended his knee. There was an interesting graph a couple weeks ago. I don't have it in front of me, and, like, now it's not as relevant, where the New Orleans Pelicans were missing 92.5% of their payroll. 92.5% of their payroll was injured. Their highest paid player was Avez Missey at $3.5 million. They were still performing better than the Philadelphia 76ers, who had in spurts Paul George, Joel Embiid, and Tyrese Maxey. I guess the first question is, what do you think the problem is with the 76ers? Do you think it's just the fit between these three players? Do they just not mesh well? Do you think that there's nagging injuries? Do you think it's just roster construction in general? Do you think it's morale? Do you think it's the vernal equinox? I don't know. Like, this team on paper should not be the second worst team in basketball, but they are.
I just think they traded for a bunch of dudes who were injury prone, or not trade, but they signed a dude who was injury prone, like
on top of a dude that's last year in the playoffs, his face stopped working because he was so injured.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, but like there's been spurts where they're healthy, and like when you look at the roster construction of the teams above them. So like the Raptors, Scottie Barnes has been on and off, like injured all season, but even like let's say Tyrese or Paul George is in and out, Joel Embiid is in and out, Tyrese Maxey is probably better than Scottie Barnes. It's close. The Raptors are better though. Do you think the loss of Tobias Harris has anything to do with it?
The loss of Tobias Harris? No.
I mean, it's all been downhill since he left. Maybe Toby was the glue holding this team together. I don't know. I don't have an answer for them. I think that Paul George would be an interesting trade candidate, but it kind of would feel like a waste at this point in the season. Given the signing in the season or off season. What team next? Just in terms of trading, let's talk Miami Heat. It seems like the Heat are finally willing to count their losses when it comes to Jimmy Butler. As a Butler stan, where would you like to see Jimmy end up? And construct a fair thought experiment trade package.
Where would I like to see Jimmy end up?
Like, where do you think he provides the most value as a past his prime, used to be mid player?
Houston Rockets.
Houston? That's actually a really interesting fit. I think that the Rockets are in a really interesting situation because they're good. Like, they're really good. But they also have a lot of really young assets that they could flip to make them great. Because right now, if I remember, Rockets are the 2 seed? Yeah, they're tied. 3-way tie for the 2 seed. And realistically, they're in a prime position to upgrade because they do have, if I remember correctly, quite a bit of salary space. And a lot of really cheap contracts that they can trade. I don't know if Jimmy Butler would be my target if I was looking to win now and I had the roster constructed. But it's interesting. If they had the assets, I think either the Grizzlies or the Mavericks would also be a really good fit. It's just neither of those teams really do have the pieces necessary to acquire him. There's no one in the East. he really doesn't fit on any team in the East except the Cavs, but like there's no way the Cavs could afford him.
There's no way.
it's impossible. Knicks. Just because of the Nova Knicks, the offseason hype, they're 14-8. They're above 500. They are the 4 seed in the East. But do you think they have underperformed given the fact that they are not the 2 seed or the 3 seed? And it felt like that's what everyone expected them to be, including us. Like, they upgraded their roster so much, but something is not clicking on this team. Now, granted, they haven't had Mitchell Robinson, and like, you don't hang your hat on Mitchell Robinson, but he
didn't
gives
I
them...
tell you the Knicks weren't as good as people thought they were?
I don't recall. I do not recall. I'm doing the politician thing. I do not recall. But
okay.
Part of this is the fact that they've been running Karl Anthony Towns at center. Like, that has been their defensive stalwart at center. Obviously not good. Mitchell Robinson coming back will help them on the defensive end of the ball, all things included. He is a pretty solid defender. But do you think this is actually kind of fitting? Like, Mikal Bridges, he was a darling. I think everyone, even on this podcast, kind of anointed him as better than he has been. Do you think that's accurate, or am I
that's
grasping
accurate.
There? I think we all kind of just like saw him in Brooklyn and Phoenix, and kind of just overestimated his defensive abilities. Now, OG Anunoby has been amazing, but just watching the Knicks play and looking at the stats, I don't think Mikal Bridges has been necessarily that impactful on either side of the ball for the Knicks. At least not in the way we expected him to be. Again, Jalen Brunson, fantastic. OG Anunoby, fantastic. Karl Anthony Towns has been a perfect fit next to Jalen Brunson. I really question, without Mitchell Robinson, this team's defensive productivity.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, coughing fit. I was.
Oh no, you're good. You're good.
I was talking.
I just think, okay, once again, it's New York. They're gonna have the light under them, so.
Yeah, brighter than LA. And they haven't been good for a lot longer than LA hasn't been good, so.
So, I honestly haven't been watching, like, what people are talking about the Knicks, but I wouldn't be surprised if someone would look, say, okay, they're the 4 seed, they're 14-8, good enough. They are 8-2 in their last 10, though, I will give them that.
Yeah, no, they've been a lot better this week than when I made the notes for this episode, so.
Yeah, no, of course.
It's just I had to follow the notes. They've been a lot better. I just think that defensively there has been a lot to be desired with this team because you are playing with Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson is an undersized guard that you do have to hide on defense. And we kind of, like, that was the big call-out last season. And Mikal Bridges was supposed to step in, and like suddenly you have two of the best perimeter defenders in basketball with OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges, and it just hasn't felt like Mikal Bridges has made that much of a difference. And that could be because you went from Julius Randle and Isaiah Hartenstein to Karl Anthony Towns, who is the best shooting big of all time. I will confidently say that. He is not anywhere near the top 20 defensive bigs of all time. Not even in the conversation. Not even, like, you're making that list, he's not even on your short list. So without that help on the back end, it kind of does limit your perimeter defenders if you get. So maybe it's not so much on Mikal Bridges, but at the same time, when you're watching, when you're doing the eye test, right? If you're watching the highlights from the Knicks game, you're not seeing so many options on OG Anunoby like you are on Mikal Bridges. Now, again, granted, like, OG Anunoby is, like, a top one percentile perimeter defender, and Mikal Bridges, for the past couple of years, we've considered, like, in the top five percentile, so, like, there is a gap between OG and Mikal, but, like, it doesn't feel like Mikal has made that much of an impact on this Knicks team, at least not in the way we expected. And again, the Knicks are the four seed, they're 14 and 8. Like, it's not like they're doing bad, it's just I think we all expected them to be the 2-3 seed, and they're the 4 seed, so it's like, is it that big of a deal? No, but. Pacers. My Pacers.
Disappointing. Yikes. Darlings of the NBA.
Disappointing, disappointing, disappointing. So, to be fair, our second string center and our third string center both went down with meniscus tears in the opening week of the NBA season. Now, center depth is important in the modern NBA, especially when you have mobile centers that are able to shoot or just get to the rim. Because right now the Pacers are running Pascal Siakam occasionally at the five, Enrique Freeman. You ever heard of him? No, you haven't. Why? Because it's Enrique Freeman. He's been running five for us. So there is an excuse to it with the injuries, whether it's those two or Aaron Nesmith or Andrew Nembhard, Ben Shepherd. Like, those three, Aaron Nesmith, Andrew Nembhard, Ben Shepherd, those are the top three perimeter defenders on the Pacers. All three of them have been hurt. Isaiah Jackson tore his MCL, ACL, whichever one he did. So there are reasons for it. I think the bigger issue has been the introduction of Benedict Mathurin into the starting lineup into being a consistent option on offense. Now, I will go to bat for Mathurin. I think Mathurin will be a star in this league. I think he has all the talent, all the tools, physical, mental, all of it. The fit alongside Tyrese Haliburton is not great. Tyrese is not a good defender. He's an okay defender. He's not a good defender. Benedict Mathurin is not a great defender. He's an okay defender. Those two together make for a really bad backcourt pairing. And then on top of that, like last season, when you looked at the Pacers' success, both in the in-season tournament and through the run in the playoffs, the thing that always stood out was the pace, the ball movement, right? Like, you watched a Pacer game and it was just exciting because, like, you didn't know what was going to happen. Like, the ball was just flying everywhere. There weren't half-court sets. They played at an all-time record pace. This season, it's kind of like 2K, where when Mathurin gets the ball, he gets tunnel vision, and it's just like the play is ending with Mathurin. There's not the same pace or movement that we saw last season. All of that kind of coalesces into the disappointment that is the Indiana Pacers. On top of that, Tyrese Haliburton, who for his career, and this is why I'm not like sounding all the panic alarms. Tyrese Haliburton for his career has shown us who Tyrese Haliburton is. This season, he has been so bad, like god awful. But it would be a bad take, in my opinion, to say this is who Tyrese Haliburton is, because we have his whole career of saying, no, this isn't. He never really has seemed to recover from the injuries last year with his back and his hamstring. Part of that was because he did not take an off-season off to recover. He immediately went and played with Team USA. I'm not sounding the panic alarms as the Pacers, or as a Pacers fan, Grant, given that most of the team is under 26. Last year's Cinderella run, loved it, but it was a Cinderella run. It's not necessarily telling of what the future holds for the Pacers, because again, it's a very young team. That said, as the trade deadline approaches, I feel like a decision has to be made in whether or not the Pacers are trying to win now or within the next 2 years with Pascal Siakam, because Pascal Siakam is on the wrong side of 30 for a future career. with the team. If that's the case, as a Pacer fan, I would rather... Coughing. I would rather, of the three young pieces, Benedict Mathurin is the one that, again, I think will be a star in the league. I think he will be. But we do a thing as fans of sports, and I don't know if this is true across all the sports. I know it's true in hockey and in basketball, so maybe you can tell me if it's true in football and baseball. Where we have a young player that we drafted and we developed, right? And we as fans are obsessed with that player and their future, and this is where we want them to be, and we refuse to think of them being traded. But we don't acknowledge that maybe what's best for both the team and that player is to trade. Move on. Because you're not going to get the developmental opportunities here, and we're not going to get the benefit out of you here, because you really cannot play with our franchise player. Is that accurate in other sports as well? Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Where fans just kind of like, they buy in on this player no matter if the fit makes sense or not.
Yep. 1,000%.
And do you have anything to add on the Pacers? Because I feel like I just rambled on the Pacers for like 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, you're the Pacer ambassador. Just... It feels like the blood pack that they did just remain basically unscathed the entirety of last season has come to roost.
It wasn't unscathed. We were missing Mathurin, which is part of it. Mathurin came back and the pace died because, like, Mathurin is Riley. Like, you pass him the ball and you just know he's shooting it. Like, he is finishing that play.
Mathurin is Riley.
All right, well, we talked about the Pacers. Let's talk about the Cavs, and I will give the floor to you. 20-3, currently
damn
the
straight
best team in basketball.
Damn fucking straight.
Going into the season, we had an episode where we were talking about the fit of Mitchell and Garland and how they had to be over because it just was not working.
Huh?
We were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or were we?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think as a Cavs fan?
I think we're going all the way, baby.
You think you beat the Celtics?
Yes.
All right. Talk me through it. Why?
Because it's finally, like, meshing. The offense is working. The defense is working. Garland and Donovan are finally scoring at a fairly elite level. Mobley even took a step up offensively.
So I was looking. So I use cleaning the glass a lot. Let me pull that up because I forgot we were talking about Cleveland, and then I saw them on the stats. So basically, sorry, I didn't mute my mic. If you look, hold on. Let's do it this way. This will be easier. I think the biggest change for the Cavaliers was the integration of Evan Mobley into the offense. And, like, once I have the stat pulled up, I'll be able to explain that more clearly.
Which it had to be the whole time. That was the thing.
It should have been the whole time. It should have been. Usage. So, basically, he went from... Oh, it was touches. Basically, for the past few seasons during the Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland experiment, those two have dominated the touches, and that makes sense. Like, Donovan Mitchell is an all-NBA caliber player. Darius Garland is a fringe all-NBA player. When he's hot, not all the time. Darius Garland is not an all-NBA player all the time, but when he's hot, he is. And those two dominated the touches. And this season especially, Evan Mobley, Darius Garland, and Donovan Mitchell, granted, like, there were times where they all played without each other, so, like, some of the numbers are skewed. But early on in the season, their touches per game were identical. Like, within, like, one or two touches per game. previous seasons, it was like 20 for each of them more than Evan Mobley. Not only that, Evan Mobley has been getting more touches on the perimeter. He's been getting more shots, like jump shots, not just within 3 feet. The impact that has had on how teams are having to approach it, because before you were just like, all right, we got to shut down Mitchell. And then we're good. We're Gucci. You stop him, you force everyone else to beat you, it's over. Now it's not the case. Like, you have to be able to stop all three of them, because if you guard two of them, the other one is scoring. That green light that they gave Mobley at the start of the season, I feel has had the most impact of any single coaching decision in the NBA for a long time. Like, since someone went to Steph Curry and said, you can shoot from 40 feet away time you want. Like, that kind of impact, I think, was the same impact that we saw with Evan Mobley. Because while Mobley is still an all-NBA defensive player, now he has an offensive side of his game that has just been unleashed, that opens the floor for the rest of the offensive players. And that's not just Garland and Mitchell. Like, Okoro has been really nice. Allen has been really nice. Like, that coaching decision, I don't even... Who is your coach? Is it Bickerstaff still? Or is it not Bickerstaff?
No, Bickerstaff's the guy. No. Can.
Who is the coach of the Cavaliers? Kenny Atkinson. Hired this year. Okay.
Yes.
Honestly, take a bow. Best decision a coach has made. It has opened the floor for the entire team. And it's worked. You are the best team in the association, and it's not even close. And it's not like the Cavs have had an easy schedule. I dropped my mic. Sorry, I gave the floor to you, and I rambled.
It's all good. I mean, keep going. Might as well at this point.
No. I have given my flowers to Evan Mobley and Kenny Atkinson, even though I couldn't remember it was Kenny Atkinson behind the bench.
All right, I'm just saying, give me the argument why you think the Cavs couldn't beat the Celtics.
I think the Celtics just have too many options when healthy. Because, like, realistically, like, okay, so who is guarding Porzingis? You could say Jared Allen, sure.
Yep.
Who's guarding Jason Tatum? Mobley. It has to be Mobley. Who is guarding Jaylen Brown? Okoro?
No, Okoro.
Who's guarding Drew Holiday? Donovan Mitchell? Darius Garland? Now you run into the problem. Now here's the question. Who's guarding Horford? You see the problem. It's not that I don't think the Cavs have the talent. I just don't think the matchup works. The Celtics are too big and skilled. Because the smallest player on the Celtics starting lineup is 6'4", and he's strong as hell. The backcourt of the Cavs, the tallest player is 6'1".
You're not wrong. So you think it's just going to be a size thing
that they're not going to be able to overcome? Yeah, I think it's all size. I think it's... because if you just do one-to-one skill, it's a pretty even matchup. It's just the Celtics are so freaking big. And, like, if you're matching up against them in the way you do, because Al Horford is the odd man out. Right? Has he been starting for the Celtics right now? I don't think he is. Regardless, you have to match size with size, and the Cavs just don't really have that option. Again, they could get hot at the right time, and I mean, the Pacers almost beat the Cavs in a couple games, and they weren't even playing defense, so it is possible. On paper, the Cavs don't match up well with the Celtics. It's not a talent thing. It's just a matchup thing. I think if they get past the Celtics, I don't think there's anyone in the West that can beat them. I really don't think the Thunder, maybe. The Thunder are a team that's really hard for me to project.
Why?
I don't know. It's just they're so... They're a complete team. But it still just feels like a team that's going to suffer from the there's only one ball dilemma.
Really?
If that makes sense. Because, like, right now, like...
You know, could the Celtics have that kind of dilemma?
Not necessarily, because they're also just really good on both sides of the ball. And, like, they have a lot of really good off-ball players. And I mean, the same can be said about the Thunder. I don't know. There's just something about the Thunder that just doesn't... It's the eye test thing. It doesn't feel like a championship roster. And, like, also, like, if you were to end the season right now, would you have Shea in your top five MVP?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Why not?
Hold on, let's look at the current odds. I feel like to win in the NBA, you have to have
an MVP. He's averaging 30 points on the number one team in the West. He has to have Vegas odds. Hold on.
Well, I guess he is number two.
Yeah, so...
That's just surprising. I don't know. I don't know. There's just something about the team that just doesn't scream championship team to me. Maybe it's just, like, health. Giannis is number four. Real quick, we'll fly through a couple more, and then we'll wrap up here. Minnesota Timberwolves. Troubles in Paradise. Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert, not exactly seeing eye to eye. Anthony Edwards doing Anthony Edwards things. He is in the MVP race, but, like, it's going to be kind of hard to win when your two bigs are at each other's throat every game. They are currently number 10. Spurs. Victor Wembanyama is officially on the MVP odds tracker. Do you think that is just media darling? Or do you think the fact that... is Wemby. Do you not agree with him being there yet? Because Wemby is currently averaging 23-10-4, almost a steal and a half, a block and a half a game. Two nights ago, he had 34-14-11. Wemby is nice. Is he going to fulfill my prediction of being in the Western Conference Finals a year after he was drafted? No, absolutely not. But he could drag this team to a play-in team. Do you think that's a success? To go from one of the worst teams in basketball to the play-in team in 1 year. I would view that as a success, personally. That's just me.
No, probably not, honestly. It's probably not a success.
Really? Yeah, so is it really just, like, conference finals or bust for your next step for Wemby? Like, you don't think, like, making the playoffs?
Well, if you're in the play-in, you're not making the playoffs.
Play-in is postseason. It's not playoffs, it's postseason. I count that.
I think you have to make the playoffs.
If they make the playoffs, even if they get bounced in the first round in a sweep, 1 year after his rookie season, that's a success for you.
Yes.
Okay. That was my big concern, was that that's what you weren't saying. I thought that's what you weren't saying.
Playing just, it's so weird. Just
all right, let's wrap it up with the greatest worst thing in sports, the Washington Wizards.
Oh god. Who's playing a lot better?
What?
Who's playing a lot better? Can't have no splash without the pool.
It's been a long time since you've been able to say that.
He's averaging 20 a game.
They are generationally bad. If you told me 20 years from now, right? Like we're fast forwarding 20 years into the future, all right? Somehow we're not all dead from whatever. The 2024-2025, holy crap, Washington Wizards were the worst team ever in the history of the NBA. Wouldn't shock me.
It kind of would.
This is embarrassing basketball.
They have 2 wins.
We're a quarter of the way into the season.
Hold on. What's the worst?
Look. NBA. Oh, it's probably the Bobcats. I would bet
34-4. Oh, wow.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying? This is generationally bad. And you know what the worst fucking part is, Angelo? They could lose the lottery.
They could lose the lottery.
They could lose the lottery. They could pick 5.
How is that? Wouldn't you, like, just be so happy if that happened?
Me? Yes.
Yes, you. Yes, you.
Because I think tanking is embarrassing for the sport. I think that you should not be able to, like, flip on, like, you're watching your favorite team, right? You turn on the Cavs, and you're like, oh, they're against the Wizards. Oh, well, no fucking point in watching this goddamn travesty. Cavs win. If you go to League Pass right now, or in an hour when games start, you go to League Pass and you go to the team that the Wizards are playing, just go ahead and bet money that the team the Wizards are playing is winning. It's not enjoyable. It's pointless. It's embarrassing as a league that we are still allowing tanking, because that's what this is, to continue. It's disgusting. It's not competitive. It's not sports. It's not athletics. Let it die. Punish teams for doing this intentionally, because that's the only reason you trade for Jordan Poole, to be a tank commander. And I mean, it's not all on him. Like, Alex Saar has been ass. Has he even playing? Basically, if I'm the Wizards and, like, I'm not doing the Wizards thing, right? Like, I'm not utilizing the fact that I'm bad to lose a lot of games to get a higher draft pick. I'm trading everyone not named Alex Saar, just because potential, and Bilal Coulibaly. Everyone else is on the block. Maybe Keyshawn George. Keyshawn George can stay. Everyone else I'm trading, though.
So you're going to make them worse somehow?
I'm trading for draft picks, and then I'm hoping for the best. Because, like, the only reason you tune in to Wizards anything is Coulibaly highlights. No, not Jordan Poole. Coulibaly. He has been sneakily enjoyable to watch. He is the only reason to tune in to Wizards ball. Because, like, if I'm not... Jordan Poole didn't play in this game. That doesn't help. Jordan Poole shooting 43%. He is shot chucking, my guy.
Well, yeah, someone's got to score.
He's shooting slightly better than the rookie. Malcolm Brogdon is shooting 50%, 14 points per game. Coulibaly is shooting 45%, 13 points per game. Jordan Poole just shoots like a $40 million a year player, and he doesn't hit like one. I don't know. Any teams I missed? Or any teams you want to talk about?
No, I'm good on that.
Even briefly. All right. Well, anything else you want to talk about?
I'll wait.
What?
The NBA is a quarter of the way through. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Words.
They're hard sometimes, I know.
Do you think it's crazy that the Cavs have won 20 games and they're only like a half game up on first?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like it's the Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics and then everyone else. And that everyone else includes the Western Conference. Like, I just, again, I haven't really seen a lot of East-West matchups this year. But it just, based on the eye test from the games I've watched of all the teams involved, I really just do feel like there is no one in the West that compares to those two teams right now. As the season progresses, that could change. I am not saying the Thunder, the Nuggets, or whoever else is in the top 10 right now. The Mavericks, the Rockets. Like, I'm not saying they're bad teams. I'm just saying, like, comparatively, based entirely on the eye test, I don't think they're playing basketball in a way that those two teams are playing. It is fun to watch all the teams that are in those, like, top 10 between the two conferences. But it's like you're watching, like, when you watch the Cavs or the Celtics versus anyone else in the NBA, it's kind of like you're watching, like, a college team versus a high school team. And then when you watch, like, the Rockets or the Thunder, it's kind of like you're watching a number one ranked high school team versus a high school team. And it's like, yeah, they're better than everyone else that they're playing, but, like, the Celtics and the Cavs have been kind of amazing this season so far. And again, they could regress to the mean. Like, when you're looking at these shooting splits, like, there's no way they're going to maintain those, right? So, like, once they regress, it's going to be a lot closer. But right now, as of today, I do not think there is a team that compares to those two. I think whoever gets out of the East between those two, if the season ended today, is the NBA champion. And I don't think it's close. On paper. That's the important part, because, again, a team can get hot at any time. Again, nothing against the Thunder, the Heat, Rockets, Mavericks, whatever. It's just, it's night and day.
It really is night and day.
Alright. Anyway,
that's it for me.
All right. Hey guys, if you got this far, that means you probably like what we're doing here. Leave a like, comment, subscribe, whatever your platform lets you do. Follow along with us. Angelo and Alex still do episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on the football podcast. Changing the days. What days have we been changing to? Because you just fucked up my whole advert.
I know, I'm good at that. Well, the next episode actually releases, well, it would have released yesterday. And then next week Saturday. It would be, yeah, Saturday.
Okay. Whatever.
And next week we're going back to Tuesday, Thursday.
So we're going to try to be consistent again. That's the plan.
Cool.
Who knows? You might have an episode where it's just Ren rambling for 30 minutes until I get tired. We're going to try to get an episode out. You never know. I might finally fucking snap. But regardless, if you like what we do here, you'll like what we do over there. If you're just tuning in for the first time, thank you. That's all I got. We are on all socials. We don't really do it, but we're all on socials at No Reserves. Yeah, I got nothing else. Have a great night. See you guys next week.
See ya.